we've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance. Yes!
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. The road games get tougher and tougher.
Oh, there's not an easy answer to that.
Second moves in, shoots, scores! How about that?
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
It's a Winnipeg Jets game day edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're back. Last show of 2016. I'm your host, Ezra Ginsberg, filling in for Drew Mandel, who's in Kentucky, joined by Dave Manuk in studio. We've got a great show for you this morning. We're going to be joined by Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun in about 15 minutes. We're going to talk a little Winnipeg Jets. They, of course, play the New York Islanders tonight in the annual New Year's Eve game. We're also going to be joined by Arthur Staple of Newsday. He covers the Islanders. We're going to continue to preview the Jets-Islanders game with Arthur. We're going to be joined by Mark Masters as well. He's in Toronto covering the World Junior Tournament. Big game this afternoon between Canada and USA. And we're also going to be joined by Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press to talk a little bit of Manitoba Moose, maybe a little bit of Winnipeg Jets as well. Dave, haven't seen you in a long time. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well, Ez. I'm feeling good. You know, we had a nice week off, or almost 2 weeks off for me, actually. So it was good. Nice, relaxing times here in Winnipeg. A little cold, but it was relaxing.
Yeah, I got back from Mexico last night at about 9 o'clock.
You got a nice sheen going.
Yeah, and when we kind of stepped down, we knew that there was a lot of snow on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
But to come from plus 30 and return to, you know, minus 15 weather wasn't the greatest, but I'm actually really happy to be back. You know, we got the New Year's Eve game tonight between the Jets and Islanders, and, you know, all good things must come to an end. You know, when you're going on an all-inclusive trip that, you know, it's only going to last so long, right? So I'm glad to be back. Dave, I want to get right into it here, and we're going to have Ted Wyman on in about 15 minutes, but I want to look back at the week that was for the Jets. You know, first off, on Tuesday night with the win over the Chicago Blackhawks, and then with Thursday night's loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets, who have now won 14 games in a row. It's unbelievable. It just doesn't seem right saying Blue Jackets and 14 games in a row in the same sentence. But let's start off first with that win in Chicago, Dave, because we know that the Jets have had a lot of success against the Blackhawks this season, and we'll get into Thursday night's game against the Blue Jackets. But what were your thoughts on that game? I got to catch it actually in Mexico. There was a bar there called Generals, owned by a Canadian actually, so I got to watch most of the game, and the Jets certainly have handled the Blackhawks well this year.
Yeah, you know, it really is interesting that, you know, you're talking about the top team in the Western Conference, loaded with talent. I mean, it is actually unbelievable to think that this is a team, the Jets team, that right now is below 500, yet they've knocked off Chicago, who at the time only had 9 losses and now has 10, or had 10, 3 of which came at the hands of the Winnipeg Jets. So, you know, it was an interesting game. The Jets, it was an unusual game in the sense that the Jets flew to Chicago that morning, which, you know, is out of character for anything other than a preseason game, because the NHL mandates generally that you have to be in the city the day before. So that was unusual, but, you know, they flew into Chicago, you know, had their normal skate. I guess they went to a hotel, had a little snooze, and then, you know, played a complete hockey game. And, you know, they got good goaltending. The defense played well, and they had scoring. So, I mean, when they have the balance that they had on Tuesday night against the Blackhawks, again, like I said, one of the top teams, that's exactly what you have to do. And it's now it's the consistency factor, right? Like, being able to do that one game is nice. Can you continue that into the next game, right? And that's always been the big question with Winnipeg.
Yeah, and it's really incredible that the Jets have outscored Chicago 9-2 in 3 games. The Chicago Blackhawks team is still a top team in the Western Conference, but the Winnipeg Jets, similar to 2 years ago when the Jets made the playoffs, they seem to play their best against the best in the Central Division. And, you know, you look at, you know, the performance, as you mentioned, Dave, that they got from Connor Hellebuyck. he was solid. Didn't have to steal the game, but he was just very good. And he's already had one shutout against the Chicago Blackhawks earlier in the year. So I agree with you. I thought it was one of those games where the Jets just outworked the Chicago Blackhawks. And the Blackhawks had chances, and Hellebuck had to come up big. But you had a very impressive performance from the veterans, Blake Wheeler, Brian Little. Mark Scheifele obviously had the big goal that turned out to be the winning goal. But it was very impressive. And, you know, you mentioned it was a complete game. And that's, as you also touched on, something that the Jets just haven't been able to put together. And that continued a little bit against Columbus early on with the Jets getting out to the early lead. But they weren't able to get the third game in a row, obviously, the three-game winning streak going. So I thought it was very impressive. Again, I was in Mexico watching the game. So, you know, there was a couple cervezas being... you know, tossed around. So, but they were still able to put it on, and you know, I watched it as closely as I could.
Now, what do they do? Do they have Spanish? You know, is it English subtitles with Spanish announcers, or do you hear Brian Munns? Or no, it was Brian making the call.
Well, it was, we didn't have the sound. The sound.
Oh, okay.
So it was a little bit weird because they also had country music playing.
Really?
So we're watching the Jets and Chicago play in Mexico, listening to country music. So it was a little bit weird. So I didn't get, unfortunately, to hear Munsey with the call and hear Shane as well. But, you know, it was a very impressive performance. And, you know, I thought, especially the performance by the Enstrom-Trouba pair.
I was just going to say.
And I realized Enstrom took a penalty, or did he take two, actually? Yeah, I think he took two, didn't he?
Yeah, two that game.
But I thought that they were very good. And, you know, moving on, though, Dave, to the Thursday night game between the Jets and the Blue Jackets. We know that the Blue Jackets were coming in hot.
That's a little bit of an understatement, actually.
Right. And the Jets scored the first goal of the game for the 13th time in the last 16 games. What did you think of the way the Jets played against that game? And how do you think that's going to carry over tonight against the Islanders?
You know what? It was an interesting start to the game. I thought the Jets had a lot of jump, and they played like a team that was kind of on a mission. You know, they came out, they had a 7-0 lead in shots after about 4 or 5 minutes in the game. You know, the Columbus took an early penalty. The Jets didn't score on it, but they generated a lot of opportunities. And, you know, you felt like it was kind of – I actually felt like the Jets were in it. And, you know, we're not – look, first of all, the Jets haven't had a lot of success against the Eastern Conference. And secondly, you're talking about right now the number one team in the East – and a team that's on fire.
Number one team in the NHL.
And in the NHL, sorry, yeah. So the number one team in the NHL, and a team that's just like literally on fire. Their bus was actually on fire as they were driving into the MTS Center. That's how hot they are right now. And you know, that Columbus team is interesting because they're just getting contributions from everyone. And they have everyone buying into this John Tortorella. I mean, John Tortorella right now looks like a genius. And you weren't there to ask a question, as you know, he was looking around definitely after the game, going, "Where's that Ginsberg fellow? I want to talk to that guy."
Yeah, I'm sure.
But you know, it was just the Jets came out the way they needed to come out, and they got the early goal, and you thought, okay, well, this could be something. The Jets could knock kill the streak, and not only would they kill, you know, the Columbus's chance at a 14 game win streak, and you know, moving on against Minnesota potentially to set up what we have tonight, but the Jets could actually win their third game in a row, which we know already for 7 times, I think, this season, they haven't been able to do. So, you know, that would be a blue, because I'm sure they're sick of being asked by us, you know, what do you think, why is it that this team can't win, you know, that critical third game in a row? So I thought they started off the way they need to start off. And then, you know, sure enough, then next thing you know, it's 1-1. 2-1, and you're like, okay, is this the way it's going to go? And then it's 3-1. And the third goal actually was a bit of a controversial one. Like, I thought, you know, I thought Enstrom got shoved into Hutchinson. So I thought it could have been interference, and I thought they would at least review it. And to be honest with you, I was actually getting ready to write that the ref had called the goal off. I actually thought it was going to be called off and then maybe reviewed, and they called it a good goal. So I was like, oh, okay, they're not going to review that. And then, you know, I think – It was marginal. I mean, it could have gone either way, I guess. But obviously, they didn't see it as such. So it stood. And then, of course, again, it went up to 4-1. And you're like, okay, well, here we go. And then the Jets get that one back on the when Brian Little scores to make it 4-2, right? So,
and that was the TSN turning point, right? If that goal is called back,
right,
it's still a 2-1 game, but the goal counts. The way Sergei Bobrovsky was playing, I mean, we saw Sergei Bobrovsky make many good saves in that game. He stopped Brian Little on a breakaway. Mark Scheifele had several good chances there. later in the game. I want to ask you, though, Dave, what did you think about the decision to start Michael Hutchinson? Michael Hutchinson obviously didn't have his best game. He let in four goals. The first goal of the game, he coughs up the puck to Nick Foligno. You know, goes off of Buff's skate. He's trying to put it in the corner. Brandon Saad. Got that goal. What did you think about the decision to start Michael Hutchinson, considering that Connor Hellebuyck was so good against Chicago?
You know, it's interesting. So Maurice was asked about it, and we'll talk about it a little bit more in the show later in the show. But Maurice was asked about it yesterday and about whether he regrets making the decision to start Michael Hutchinson over Connor Hellebuyck based on the fact that Connor Hellebuyck had been playing so well the previous game. And he kind of defaulted to the Vancouver, and he basically said Hellebuyck hadn't, you know, was coming kind of off the shaky start in Vancouver, and then he gave him the opportunity in Chicago. And his justification was he didn't want to let Hutchinson rest for too long, you know, or sit for too long, I should say. And look, if he wins the game, then everybody's congratulating Maurice for being a genius because it, you know, he looks brilliant for starting a goalie that, you know, historically had played well against. I think he was, I saw someone tweet, it was like, I think he was 2-0 against Columbus. Now, of course, was that the same Columbus team? No, of course not. So, I mean, you got to take that, those numbers with a grain of salt. But, you know, it's interesting in the sense that, he doesn't start Hellebuyck, goes with Hutchinson. His justification was Hellebuyck traditionally hasn't played well after the Chicago game. Again, that's what his metrics say when they look at it. And again, he talks to the coaching staff, he talks to his assistant coaches, he talks to Wade Flaherty, and he says, what do we, you know, I mean, it's a collective conversation. Ultimately, he's the coach, he makes the decision, and he decided to go with Hutchinson. And again, like I said, yesterday there were a lot of questions thrown his way as to whether he regrets the decision to start Michael Hutchinson and whether let's be realistic. That first goal that Saad scored, I mean, Hutchinson misplayed it, right, behind the net, and it leads to the goal. And
then he went out of position when Brandon Saad took the first shot,
right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, you also have to factor in, Dave, that Michael Hutchinson was very good in Vancouver.
Yeah, he was excellent.
Before the Christmas break, right. He picked up the win in that second game on the road against the Canucks. So I think it's pretty ridiculous to start second-guessing Paul Maurice's decision to start Michael Hutchinson. We know that there isn't a clear-cut number one goaltender. Even though Connor Hellebuyck is getting the majority of the starts this year, I think Paul Maurice has been pretty clear that just because Connor Hellebuyck has started more games thus far doesn't mean he's going to get five or six starts in a row just given to him.
But that could be true. But I think the interesting thing is, and I think what the what they were trying to get out of Maurice yesterday was, here's an opportunity to establish Connor Hellebuyck as your bona fide number one goalie because he's just beaten the number one team in the West. And if he can beat the number one team in the East, I mean, what is that going to do for his confidence? A young goaltender kind of assumed to have the, you know, the reins of this team or the mantle as that number one. And here's his opportunity to kind of seize it and say, okay, this is my team. I've got it. And instead he goes to Hutchinson. So again, like I said, it's easy for me to sit in this chair and to second guess the decision making, but I'm just saying, if you want to look at it from the other perspective, you could say, well, here's why didn't you do it that way?
And Dave, I have to say, I mean, I was sitting there in Mexico watching the game, and when it was announced earlier in the day by Munsey that Michael Hutchinson would be starting against mm-hmm. Columbus, I was surprised. I thought the Jets were going to go with Connor Hellebuyck. I'm not saying that I wasn't surprised, but I'm just saying that Paul Maurice had his reason for starting Michael Hutchinson. Michael Hutchinson was coming off of a very good performance against the Vancouver Canucks, where he made some very big saves for the Jets, and he didn't play well. And I think both of us would agree that Connor Hellebuyck will get the start tonight against the Islanders, most likely. Hasn't been announced yet, but I think we'd be surprised if Hellebuyck doesn't start tonight. But it was just a little bit interesting that Maurice decided to go with Hutchinson. And as you said, yesterday he kind of addressed those questions about the goaltending. And he said that, you know, I'm going to go with the goaltender that gives us the best chance to win. And most hockey coaches will go with the goaltender that gives them the best chance to win. So unless your name is Carey Price or Devin Dubnyk or one of those established number one goaltenders in the NHL, if you have two guys that you think can stop the puck equally as well, then you're going to put that guy in the net.
And I think what it ultimately says is that neither guy has stepped up. And if you read the papers, you know, a little site called LegalCurve.com, morning papers, you would see that a lot of the articles today are about the fact that right now the Jets don't have a number one goaltender. They have two number twos. So, you know, or one A's, whatever you want to call them. But the fact is that you've got a duality where you've got two guys who are sharing the net essentially. Neither one rising to the occasion and saying, this is my net. I'm going to have it for, you know, 60, 70% of the games. So right now the coaching staff has default. And we've saw, remember, you know, if we look at these games in 10 game blocks, I think in that games 11 to 20, it was Hellebuck's net. I think he had 8 of 10 starts. But since then, now as we've gone to, you know, games 30 to 40, and I'd have to look, I don't know it off the top of my head, but like, I essentially would guess it's closer to a split, or maybe it's like 60-40 as opposed to 80-20. So, again, Maurice is kind of defaulting back to that rotation, and it's a question as to whether he's going to, you know, go with one and ride the goal, the potentially hot goalie.
Well, we expect it to be Connor Hellebuyck in net tonight against the New York Islanders, but of course we'll let you know as soon as we find out here on TSN 1290. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day. We're going to take a break right now, Dave, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by the sports editor of the Winnipeg Sun, Ted Wyman. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Ezzy and Dave, no Drew. It's the odd two-man version of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I should mention that this segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Let's head out.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by the sports editor of the Winnipeg Sun, Ted Wyman. Ted, how are you doing?
Doing really well. How are you guys this morning?
We're doing very well. We got here. There was a lot of snow, but we were able to get here. We're back. We haven't been on the air in about a week and a half, and we don't have Drew in the studio, so we're just enjoying that.
Well, I guess that makes it different. I thought you were in Mexico.
Yeah, I just got back last night, so you know, I'm shaking off the rust a little bit here, and you know, just trying to get a little bit acclimatized to the weather again.
That's why you're finding so much snow, because you weren't here for all the big
stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Ted, for the first 15 minutes of the show, Ezzy's been talking straight Spanish, so it's been very difficult to understand him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Una cerveza. I'm more of a Portuguese after being in Rio this year. So.
Yeah. Look at you.
Yeah, that's another level. Ted, we want to, you know, start off talking about the Winnipeg Jets, obviously, and, you know, their game tonight against the New York Islanders. About a few minutes ago, just before we had you on, we were talking about the goaltending situation. I'm assuming we're expecting it to be Connor Hellebuyck tonight, and were you surprised that Connor Hellebuyck didn't get the start Thursday night against Columbus?
Yeah, when the best team in the NHL comes to town, you play your best goaltender. So, yes, I was definitely surprised that they didn't go with Hellebuyck, especially after how well he played against the Blackhawks. But I guess, you know, from Paul Maurice's standpoint, Hutchinson had a good record against the Columbus Blue Jackets over his career, and he had played well in his last game. But still, I was very surprised it wasn't Hellebuyck, and I would be even more surprised if it wasn't Hellebuyck today.
Ted, you know, the one thing that we talk about with this Jets team is discipline, or one of the things we talk about with this Jets team is discipline. And you know, when you're the 28th ranked penalty killing team and you're up against the number one ranked power play unit, you know, it's probably advantageous to not take penalties. And yet they still did that on Thursday against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Is that this team's Achilles heel?
Well, it's one of them, for sure. You know, you touched on some of the others. The goaltending isn't good every night, obviously. The defensive play isn't good every night, and that leads to inconsistency. But one thing they are consistent about generally is taking penalties that are iffy. You know, I think that when you get the hooking penalties and the holding penalties, you know, you've seen Toby Enstrom a few times this year, and he's not even normally a big penalty taker, but a few times this year I've seen him where he's got one hand on the guy's hip and one hand up in the air as if to say, I'm not doing anything. But the problem is he has one hand on the guy's hip, so he is holding him. And I've seen that many times. And, you know, you look at that and you say, you have to have realized through all these years and the way that they've changed the calls and how they call hooking if your stick even touches the guy's glove, that they're going to call it. and just don't do it, and they can't seem to get past that. So those are the ones that are most frustrating. Obviously, anything in the offensive zone, in the neutral zone, very frustrating for people to watch. And you have to cut those out. And this team just can't kill penalties well enough to survive it, to take bad penalties. So, yeah, it's, you use the word Achilles heel, it certainly is one of them.
We're joined by Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Ted, I want to ask you about Jacob Trouba. He's got three assists in his last two games, and you know he's obviously hadn't had the offensive numbers that that maybe he's wanted since he signed that two-year deal. Is this the best hockey that you've seen Jacob Trouba play this year?
And just before, you know, when I was thinking about what I was going to say on the show today, that was the thing that I wanted to touch on for sure, and that's that Jacob Trouba, I think, is playing extremely well. For the last little while, his puck handling has been very good. He had a little slip in Vancouver where he gave the puck away and it led to a goal, but the Jets still won that game. He's been logging the big minutes. He's been handling the puck extremely well, coming out of the zone. He does play a good style of defensive hockey as well, generally, and now he's starting to put up some points. So, yeah, I think he's creeping up there where his minutes can get higher and higher, and maybe they don't need to play Dustin Byfuglien as much as they do. I just don't think Dustin Byfuglien should be the leading minutes defenseman in the National Hockey League, the leading minutes player in the National Hockey League. He's a good player. He's a very good player, but I don't think he should be that guy. And so Trouba coming up with more and more minutes is definitely going to help the Jets, and obviously if and when Tyler Myers can come back, is going to make that even better.
And I agree with you, Ted, and Jacob did play almost 27 minutes against the Chicago Blackhawks. He was at 23 minutes and 50 seconds against Columbus, so that's certainly taking some minutes away from Dustin Byfuglien, but I agree, Jacob Trouba's minutes certainly should be higher.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he wants to be a number one defenseman, and what we've all said all along is that you have to play your way into that role, and I think that as he sat and contemplated while he was, you know, waiting to sign a new contract, he thought about that as well. And the way he signed his contract and everything suggests that that was his game plan, was to come in here and show that he could be a top defenseman and play those big minutes. And if he can do it for 2 years here, he's going to cash in. There's no question.
You know, Ted, you touched on Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers, and we heard a little more from Coach Maurice about Tyler Myers. He said, any soft tissue issues, and then he pointed to, I guess he was, as an aside to Kenny, he goes, there you go, because he was being persistent as to what the nature of the injury was. They just don't heal on a regular schedule. What do you think is happening with Tyler Myers, and do you anticipate that we see him in a Jets uniform anytime soon?
Oh, boy. You know, he is, this is obviously a bad situation for him. I mean, it was day-to-day from the very beginning. They still have him listed as day-to-day. It's been 2 months. You know, this is something bigger than what people realize, I would think. You know, if it's a soft tissue issue, it's something that just isn't progressing. The coach used the word plateaued even a week or two ago, and I don't think anything has really changed. You know, I wish I could tell you if I knew if he was going to come back this season, but it doesn't look particularly good. But that being said, the way things go, we don't really know exactly where he is in terms of his treatment and his recovery. But he's going to have to get at some point back on the ice, skating for a while, maybe even, you know, maybe conditioning stint with a player like that who's been out for so long and trying to come back. There's a lot of things that would have to happen before he could get back. So you say anytime soon, well, you know, the question is, will he play this season first? And then secondly, how long until he comes back? And I think it's going to be a matter of weeks at the very, very least.
Well, you know, sticking with that theme of players who are going to be out weeks for sure, Marco Dano was lost on Thursday. And we all, Coach Maurice says there's still, I think we're probably going to get an update maybe today. It doesn't sound good for Marco Dano, who's now been placed on IR. Were you surprised that the Jets called up Andrew Kopp as opposed to Brandon Tanev?
I thought Kopp had played pretty well, and I think he maybe deserved, you know, didn't really deserve to be sent down. I thought he had been doing well in terms of generating points. Plus, he plays two positions, and I think that they like that, his ability to play on the left side and at center. Tanev is a winger only. I like Tanev's ability to kill penalties, but I don't think he had developed much in terms of any kind of an offensive game. Plus, he was battling an injury just before they sent him down. There could be factors at play there. I don't think it'll be very long before he gets another crack here. Things happen, and there's a likelihood that, that there's going to be another chance for him. But no, I wasn't surprised about Kopp getting the call, because I just think he's been pretty good this year. And part of me thought that they would send Dano down instead of him, even when they had the chance before the injury.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun. Ted, tonight, the New Year's Eve Classic between the Jets and the Islanders, of course, is the return of Andrew Ladd to the city of Winnipeg. He was, of course, the captain of the Jets for five seasons before he was traded to the Chicago Blackhawks last season. I think we'd all expect that the Jets fans are going to give him a nice ovation. How hard has it been to watch Andrew Ladd and how badly he has struggled? He's got 11 points in 35 games this year.
I think for Jets fans, it's been pretty easy to watch that, just because, you know, they could have him. They could have signed him to a six-year contract. They wanted to sign him to a six-year contract, and he didn't. His camp chose not to make that decision, and he ends up leaving. And, you know, it's such a young man's league. It's like, when you think about it now, it's amazing that anyone was considering signing somebody who's 30 years old and has been through a lot. I mean, he's been through a lot of long playoff runs. You know, he's a banged up hockey player. There's no doubt, career wise. And now you're going to give a guy like that 6-7 years when the league is going so young. I mean, every team has got young players who are starring, who are starting to carry the load. And you just wonder if those kind of long-term contracts for players who are already in their 30s are even going to happen anymore after this season. So, Andrew Ladd, I think Andrew Ladd served the Winnipeg Jets very well. I think he deserves to be warmly recognized for his contribution to this hockey team as the captain as well. But I think the Jets certainly have benefited, I think, from not having him re-sign here, because if he is on as much of a decline in his career as it kind of appears he is, then, you know, you really wouldn't want a person like that being paid big money.
Ted, you know, we saw Nick Petan start the Thursday game with Drew Stafford and Marco Dano on the fourth line. And while he will get power play time, do you think Nick Petan's skills are being wasted on, you know, in more limited minutes?
I don't know about wasted. I mean, there's the other things that they could do. Petan has played the wing. I don't know how well Matthew Perreault has played. I think he's been okay. But there's a chance there that maybe at some point Petan could be moved up to play in a top six role on the wing, but there's no way he's getting in at center in that situation anytime soon, with Little and Shifley entrenched there. I kind of like what he's been able to do with the Jets this season. I think that that fourth line has some punch, and they even scored a big goal in Chicago. And plus, his power play time is useful, especially because you get those left-handed shots out there with Patrick Laine and an opportunity to set up the big sniper. So, I don't mind where they have him right now. He can be a contributor there, but I wouldn't hate seeing him get a chance to move up and play with some of the real top skill guys maybe on the wing at some point.
Ted, we always appreciate you coming on. Happy New Year, and we'll see you at the Jets game tonight.
Happy New Year to you guys. Have a good one.
Big thanks.
Same to you.
Big thanks to Ted for coming on the show. We're going to head to break, and when we come back, we're going to continue to preview the Jets-Islanders game tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave, we're a couple segments in here. We're doing all right, I think, without Drew.
Drew, that's what I would say.
This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. I guess I could have said don't be a me. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Big thanks to Teddy Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun for coming on. We always appreciate having him on. Dave, we're going to talk a little bit about the Manitoba Moose later, and we're going to cover the rest of the NHL. But I want to stick with the Jets here And we're talking a lot about the last couple of games, that impressive performance on Tuesday night against the Chicago Blackhawks, the 3-1 win. The Jets have now outscored the Chicago Blackhawks 9-2 in three victories over them. And the game on Thursday night against the Columbus Blue Jackets, even though the Jets had the good start and, you know, had the pushback, and Brian Little scored that goal in the third period and it looked like the Jets might come back, the Columbus Blue Jackets were able to pick up their 14th win in a row. We wanted to look at yesterday's media scrum with Paul Maurice, and there was a lot of interesting comments by Paul Maurice in that media scrum. We talked a little bit about it in the first segment before we had Ted Wyman on. We talked about the goaltending situation, and you know, entering the season, everybody knew that Connor Hellebuyck was the heir apparent, and we expected him to get the majority of the starts. And early on in the season, Dave, we saw Connor Hellebuyck and Michael Hutchinson split the starts. But then, as you mentioned, you know, somewhere around the 10-game mark, Connor Hellebuyck started to get the majority of the starts, and Michael Hutchinson started against the Columbus Blue Jackets. They didn't pick up the win, and we're expecting Connor Hellebuyck to be announced as the starter for tonight's game against the Islanders. I want to play Paul Maurice's audio from Friday. This is after practice. He's addressing the goaltending situation and why Michael Hutchinson got the start over Connor Hellebuyck, and how the goaltending situation is maybe going to play out for the rest of the season.
Paul, your comments on the goaltending situation yesterday implied maybe that your number one position is still up for grabs. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, we're not at a number that's average yet. Save percentage and goals against, so there's lots of room for us to get better in that, and better defensively in front of them to give them a chance to get better, but there's room for improvement.
And that question about your number one position still being up for grabs, in that fair assessment?
I don't think that until you get better than average you can stay claim to a number one.
Okay. How do you feel about your goaltending last night?
Below average.
Okay. How much do you second guess? How much are you second guessing your decision to go with him?
Your decisions are all based on performance. So based on, I get to be here every day, which is an advantage. The logic we used to come back with Hutch, I think, was solid.
You second guess it?
Only on performance. But no, I mean, you can't do that in here and now. There's lots that goes into it. Connor has played really well against Chicago, and probably if you were just doing it on games played, that would have been Michael's game based on the way he played in Van. Connor hadn't played great coming into Van, the second Van game. But Mike has great numbers against Columbus. Connor also has struggled in his game after Chicago, and Mike deserved to get back in the net.
Now, Dave, some pretty interesting comments from Jets head coach Paul Maurice yesterday after practice, you know, talking about how the goaltending has been average to this point and how he thought Michael Hutchinson's performance was below average. You don't see coaches say that too often. I mean, Michael Hutchinson was not good against the Columbus Blue Jackets. I don't think he was the reason they lost the game, but certainly on the first goal, he coughed it up to Brandon Saad, and that was directly related to his performance, his play. What did you think of what Paul Maurice said about the goaltending situation?
Well, let's put it this way. Paul Maurice doesn't say anything to the media that he doesn't want to say to the media. And so if he's saying it, and he's not the kind of guy who's going to throw his team under the bus. I think he's just being honest. I think he's giving an honest assessment of the play of his goaltenders. And neither one has stepped up. You know, I mean, if you look at the numbers, Connor Hellebuyck's numbers are a lot better than Michael Hutchinson's. I mean, save percentage is .913 over Hutchinson's .896, and his goals against average is 2.62 versus Hutchinson's 3.13. And now, having said that, Hellebuyck isn't exactly lighting up the league. I think he's 26 in goals. His save percentage and goals against average are 26 overall against other, you know, NHL goaltenders. So clearly, when Maurice says that his goalies need to get better, he's talking about, you know, these two goalies. And look, the defense could play better in front of them. There's no question about it. Sometimes there are lapses, but I don't know. Like, these goalies aren't – look, they're – you know, it's a tough situation, right? Because they are, relatively speaking, young goalies in the league. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, if you want to be a number one player, then you have to be – and these guys, in essence, both do. But really, as we talked about earlier, Hellebuyck is the guy that is seen as the heir apparent, the guy who's supposed to be, you know, leading this team in the future as the number one goalie. And you – I mean, it's the NHL. You can't really, like, say, well, I'm allowed to have, like, you can have one bad game, but, you know, you can't consistently be allowing soft goals, because then the problem is then your team starts to doubt you. And that's a problem, right? Like, if the team doesn't have confidence in their goaltender that he can make that save that they need in a game, that's a problem.
But, Dave, is Paul Maurice overthinking this when he talks about how Connor Hellebuyck hasn't been good after victories over the Chicago Blackhawks and Michael Hutchinson has been good in the past against the Columbus Blue Jackets? As you mentioned earlier in the show, this isn't the same Columbus Blue Jackets team of last year that lost their first seven or eight games, whatever it was, of the season, and Todd Richards was fired. This is the most dominant team. This is the number one team in the NHL. It sounds crazy to say that the Blue Jackets are the number one team in the NHL record-wise right now, but they are. Is he overthinking this? Because Connor Hellebuyck stopped 34 shots against the Chicago Blackhawks. He was phenomenal. Should he have gone with Hellebuyck against the best team in the league?
Again, the power of hindsight is wonderful for guys like us, because we can turn around and say, well, you know, and on second thought, he should have done this. Having said that, yeah, you probably think you would, for the reasons we illustrated earlier, like you know, you're having an opportunity to cement a young player as your number one goalie with potential wins against the top two teams in the NHL. And not only would that give him confidence, but again, I think it goes back to the whole idea of the team having confidence in the goaltender. And the team, the players are never going to say, if our goalie will make a stop, then we'll be fine. But the fact is, it's said without being said, right? So you know that the team, when they see a goal like what happened against, you know, Columbus to kind of open the scoring for the Blue Jackets, that just it's very deflating for the team, because, you know, you've played extremely well to that point. And then, you know, and again, like I said, regardless of whether there was a miscommunication between Byfuglien and Hutchinson, the reality is, as a team, you're sitting there going, great, you know, we had this momentum and now it's dead. And then sure enough, like I said, they give up. I think that next goal was a power play goal, right, when Morrissey was in the box. So, again, I'm not saying it's all on the goaltenders. I'm simply saying that I think the goaltenders definitely need to play better. And yeah, Maurice probably should have gone with Hellebuyck based on, you know, the fact that he had just had a great game. And like I said, to me, it's a twofold rationale. Number one, he had just played excellent against Chicago. So that you think, okay, well, and Maurice, I think he played Artur Zerbe once like 70 games. So he's not afraid of riding a goaltender in a season. So it's not like it would be a hardship to play Hellebuyck. He hasn't played in a week, you know.
But like you said, though, hindsight is 20/20. Yep. The Jets lost. He could have easily went with Connor Hellebuyck, who was very good against Chicago, but because of what the stats were saying, he decided to go with Michael Hutchinson. The Jets didn't win. We're expecting it to be Connor Hellebuyck tonight against the Islanders. Let's move away from the goaltending for a second, Dave, and go to the Winnipeg Jets injury situation. Paul Maurice talked about the injury to Tyler Myers yesterday. We know that Marco Dano is placed on the IR. We're going to get more information about his injury, we expect, today after the game day skate. But let's play the audio of Paul Maurice talking about Tyler Myers' injury.
You mentioned earlier this week that Tyler Myers had another appointment. Has he had?
Yeah, he has them regularly. He's getting better. We think he's getting closer to getting back on the ice.
Okay. Sort of being a nuisance, but if it's not
too late.
Fair enough. If the injury is not related to his surgeries, can you elaborate on what it is that's kept him out this long?
No.
No.
No. I don't even think that's legal, is it? Are you allowed to talk about other people's medical conditions?
A lot of teams send out emails that say what is hindering a player.
Emails?
Well, no,
awesome.
It's just
press
releases.
Hang by your computer.
Press releases.
We'll get you an email real soon.
Okay, occasionally
don't,
you do.
But you don't want to get away from that computer. You got to be within 5 feet of that thing the whole time.
Occasionally you do tell us what's wrong with you.
Yeah, if it's something concrete, the guy breaks a bone, the numbers are real clear. I don't always tell you when it's a concussion, but most times it's obvious when it is. There's no gray area for us in a lot of those. Any soft tissue issues, there you go. They just don't heal on a regular schedule.
And Dave, that was our good friend Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun asking Paul Maurice about the Tyler Myers injury situation. You know, this Tyler Myers injury situation is a little bit peculiar to me. He hasn't played since November 11th. He's a top two pairing defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, the Jets could use him right now. We talked to Ted Wyman about this last segment. Dustin Byfuglien's playing a lot of ice time. Jacob Trouba played almost 27 minutes against the Chicago Blackhawks. Let me ask you this, Dave. How much do the Jets miss Tyler Myers?
Oh, I mean, it's huge. It's huge. Could you imagine a team that has Byfuglien, Trouba, and Myers on it? I mean, that's, I mean, with all due respect to Ben Sherrod and Paul Postma, I mean, you can't say either one of those guys is the equal of Tyler Myers. So the fact is that having a guy like Tyler Myers with his wingspan, with his offensive ability, I mean, he definitely would add to this what the Jets have on defense. And his absence is big, literally and figuratively. But, like, you know, it's unfortunate. And it's funny because if you listen to the Maurice audio, right, like he kind of cuts Ken off initially, which means he's trying to kind of bypass his question. I think he knew where Ken was going. And you know, good for Kent for being persistent. And, you know, Maurice said ultimately, kind of wink, gave with a wink and a nod, didn't explicitly say that it was his a soft tissue issue, but kind of literally winked and nodded. Sorry, I don't think he winked, but it was more of a nod towards Ken saying that's what it is with Tyler Myers. You know, it really is, like, can you imagine where this team would be if they hadn't gotten Jacob Trouba done, or if they had traded Jacob Trouba, and then, you know, of course, you never know what would happen, but had Tyler Myers gotten injured, I mean, they'd be in real trouble. And as it is, it's like, it's disconcerting, as, you know, for Jets fans, because you're sitting there going, look how well Jacob Trouba has played now. And we all, I mean, I'm a huge Jacob Trouba fan. I think he's an amazing player. I think he's, you know, he's got abilities that you build a defense around. So,
he was the Jets' best defenseman in Chicago.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, and he seems to have, you know, have his a little bit of his groove back in terms of his offense, which, you know, for a long time he was just kind of staying back and kind of getting back into the play and getting it back into, you know, because he hadn't played for a while. But now you see Jacob Trouba, which we all expect, which is a guy with his head up looking to get offense, generate offense for this Jets team, which is something they could use from the back end, no question about it. So I like, you know, everything Jacob Trouba does, and from what we can see, and, you know, Ted talked about it, and Coach Maurice has talked about it, it doesn't appear that Tyler Myers is coming back anytime soon anyways. So,
and this injury, Dave, has really benefited Jacob Trouba, no, as far as he gets to play on the right side, he gets his power play time. What happens when Tyler Myers comes back? Someone has to come out of that top four. We don't think that Tyler Myers is going to be a third-pairing defenseman. I mean, it's either going to be Ben Sherrod or Paul Postma coming out of the lineup. I would expect it most likely to be Paul Postma, just based on how well Ben Sherrod has played over the last couple of years. But let me ask you this. How does this affect Jacob Trouba's situation overall, Dave, with the concerns over Myers' health? I mean, some people aren't sure if he's going to be back at all this year. How does this affect the Jets and whether they're going to trade Trouba, if they are considering that still?
Again, you know, Myers has a lot of benefits, you know, in terms of what he can do on the ice, and also, you know, his contract situation is good from a Jets perspective, right? Because it's decreasing money towards the end of his most of the money has already been paid out on Myers. But I mean, again, if you're saying, do you want Jacob Trouba, who's a relatively young guy in this league, versus Tyler Myers? I mean, I don't know. To me, it would be a Jacob Trouba. Yeah, I would take Jacob Trouba. I don't think it's a question that you take Jacob Trouba over Tyler Myers. But and Tyler Myers has been hurt a lot. And so you're sitting there going, well, wait a second. You got Jacob Trouba, who, you know, other than that freak accident he had, like, what, in his first year, has been a workhorse, versus Tyler Myers, who now is showing a bit of a propensity for injury. And, you know, I mean, look, regardless of whether it's a freak injury or not, look, you lost him last year, and you've lost him again this year twice. Oddly enough, twice in Colorado on a Friday night. Very unusual, but again, it's from a health, a long-term perspective, from a team that's building for the future. You know, I mean, that's what we're always hearing. This is a team that's building for the future, not for the here and now. I don't see how you stick with Tyler Myers over Jacob Trouba. And again, I'm not knocking Tyler Myers. I think he brings a lot to the table. I just think he just doesn't bring as much as Jacob Trouba does long-term.
Yeah, and Tyler Myers obviously isn't going to be in the lineup tonight against the New York Islanders, but we're going to continue to monitor the situation on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and hopefully the big man gets back into the lineup soon. Dave, we're going to head to break right now. When we come back, we're going to continue to preview the Jets-Islanders game tonight, the return of Andrew Ladd to Winnipeg. What do the Jets need to do to win? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Here we are now for Byfuglien. Ruffalo tries to force it to the front. They score! Andrew Ladd shorthanded.
Standing ovation here for Ladd. They know what the deal is.
Yep.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Ezra and Dave, sans Drew, who's on vacation. It's the last show
2016.
Of 2016 for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We got Hustler and Lawless coming up at 3 o'clock Central Time on a Winnipeg Jets game day edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Haven't had an Illegal Curve sandwich in a while, Dave. I've been out of town in Mexico, as we talked about earlier in the show. So
we had someone tweet at us yesterday, the day before. He said, because of the advertising and all of your tweets, I would imagine, he had to go and have one.
I think I've tweeted about the sandwich maybe 3,000 times.
Do you dream about the sandwich?
I do. I actually do dream about the sandwich. It's that good. So I'm definitely going to go pick one up today after the show, before the Jets game, coming up at 6 o'clock. As we mentioned, Hustler and Lawless are going to kick off today's coverage of the Winnipeg Jets versus New York Islanders. And then we're going to have the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 5 o'clock with Rick Ralph. Dave, I want to now talk about this New York Islanders team, which right now they lost to the Minnesota Wild on Thursday night. The Islanders have sent Yaroslav Halak down to the Bridgeport Sound Tigers of the American Hockey League after he cleared waivers. They're 14-15-6. They've got 34 points right now, minus goal differential of minus 13. They've only won three games on the road so far, so that's looking pretty good for the Jets tonight at the MTS Center. What's your take on this Islanders team? They lost Franz Nielsen. They lost Kyle Okposo. Lost Matt Martin. Replaced them with Andrew Ladd, Jason Chimera. I mean, this isn't a good team, Dave, but what does this team do right now? Do they throw in the towel or what do they do? What do you think about this Islanders team? They're a bit of a mess right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, this is a team that was everyone thought was on an upward trajectory, right? You thought they've got some nice young pieces, and then they lost a lot of their core last year. Or over the summer, I should say, and like you said, they replaced them. And they look. John Tavares is a heck of a hockey player. I mean, he's a fun player to watch.
He might be a top three center in the NHL.
Yeah, he's just super talented. Like, it's unbelievable watching that guy play. Brock Nelson, another guy who's got a lot. You know, young guy, good talent. Andres Lee, they have some nice pieces. Ryan Strom, but then you look at it. And, I mean, the Halak situation, the goalie situation in New York wasn't good. Andrew Ladd has picked up of late, but still, you know, was really, really slow early on. And you know, there were a lot of jokes being made, not necessarily even just by folks in Winnipeg, but people in general saying, you've only got 6.6 years left on this Andrew Ladd deal. Don't worry, New York. And, you know, it wasn't looking very good for them. I suspect Jets fans are happy. In fact, we got a tweet from the Soch who said that he doesn't think that there should be a any more Andrew Ladd. Hold on, I'll read it from the Soch. Said, hold on. Ladd was back already and had his little tribute. Jets dodged a bullet by him snubbing the Jets. So Soch feels that Ladd snubbed the Jets. Jets fans are probably not upset about having the $36 million in the bank to spend on other players like Dustin Byfuglien. And, you know, I mean, it's interesting that at one point we were talking Byfuglien or Ladd. Could you imagine had the Jets made that decision, where they would be?
Well, and you know, you look at, you know, Andrew Ladd, and we talked to Ted Wyman about Andrew Ladd, and Arthur Staples is going to join us in about 10 minutes time. And it's easy to look at Andrew Ladd's numbers and you know, say that, you know, it was a good thing that the Jets didn't sign Andrew Ladd to that 6-year contract. But this New York Islanders team, Dave, has many more problems than just Ladd. They just aren't getting enough offense, and actually it isn't even the offense that's the major problem. It's how they've played defensively, and Yaroslav's numbers have been atrocious, and Jean-François Berube has been a guy that they've had as a healthy scratch for the majority of the season. He's only gone into four games and he's struggled, but clearly by placing Yaroslav Halak on waivers and then I believe he has cleared waivers because
I think he went to Bridgeport.
He did go to Bridgeport. So we'll ask Arthur Staple about that. We'll confirm that. But when you look at how Yaroslav Halak has played, I mean, his save percentage, .904, goals against, 3.23. He's only got 6 wins and 21 starts this year, Dave. It's unbelievable. Thomas Greiss has been much better, playing 13 games thus far this year, save percentage of .922. So clearly Thomas Greiss has stolen that number one job from Yaroslav Halak, and Jean-Francois Berube is going to be the backup for the rest of the season, as opposed to sitting in the press box. He's actually going to dress and be the backup to Thomas Greiss. But this team just hasn't been good enough defensively. A guy like Travis Hamonic has struggled this year. Nick Leddy has struggled defensively this year. This team has some scoring. Defensively, they've just been exposed by that big, bad Metropolitan division.
Well, I'm pretty sure the last time we had Arthur on, I'm fairly certain it was the last time we talked to Arthur. We talked about the fact that Jean-Francois Berube has sat basically in the press box for the last, two or three seasons. I mean, he the last time he played a major role on a team was he played 52 games for the Manchester Monarchs in 2014-15. So the Islanders are worried that if they send him down, he'd have to clear waivers. And they're clearly worried they're going to lose him. And so they didn't want to lose him. So instead of doing that, it's very unusual. They had 3 goalies up with the team for this length of time. And if you recall, as we talked about it, because Alan Walsh called the Islanders out on Twitter, which is what he usually does.
And we should mention Walsh is Halak's agent.
Right. He's Halak's agent, and he's also Greiss's agent, I think, or Berube's. He's the agent of 2 of the 3 goalies in New York. And so I know for sure it's Halak. I can't remember which of the other two he is, but I know for sure he's one of the 2 agents. Yeah, he's the agent for one of those other 2 goalies. And he essentially said, how are you guys running this system? It's ridiculous.
Well, and they said that Garth Snow is on record as saying that they didn't want to lose Jean-Francois Berube to waivers, meaning if they didn't want to have him in the press box and send him down to the AHL, he would have to clear waivers because he wasn't in the entry level years of his contract. So it was a bit of a bizarre situation, but certainly this Islanders team, there are only 4 other teams in the NHL, Dave, that have given up more goals than the New York Islanders: the Arizona Coyotes, the Colorado Avalanche, the Vancouver Canucks, and the Philadelphia Flyers. So I guess 4 other teams have given up more goals than this New York Islanders team. So it's certainly a team right now that's coming into Winnipeg limping, hurting. They've sent their number one goaltender at the beginning of the season down to the American Hockey League. So, on paper, this Islanders team should be there for the taking for the Winnipeg Jets. They're bleeding, so the Winnipeg Jets should be stepping on those wounds tonight at the MTS Center. But as you mentioned, John Tavares is still an excellent player. They're still strong up the middle. Ryan Strome, I know he struggled a little bit, but he's a good young player for this Islanders team, and they're scrappy. They're still one of those teams that's up at the top of the list and in hits with guys like Cal Clutterbuck and Jason Chimera. So I'm very surprised that the Islanders have fallen this hard, Dave. I predicted that the Islanders would miss the playoffs this year. I didn't think that they would be as good as they were last year, but I certainly didn't think they would be this bad. And I also didn't predict that the Columbus Blue Jackets wouldn't be a playoff team. So
you can't get them all, as
well. My predictions, I'm not saying that I'm, a genius or anything like that, but you could certainly see the writing on the wall, Dave, when it came to the Islanders. When you lose an excellent two-way center like Franz Nielsen and Kyle Okposo, one of the best power wingers in the game, you knew there was going to be a bit of a drop-off. But second last in the Eastern Conference, we're talking about now that the Islanders might be a draft lottery team. They might be getting the first or second overall pick, which is absolutely crazy. We'll have to see what happens. Colorado and Arizona are struggling a lot, but certainly it's been a tough year in Brooklyn. The ice hasn't been good, and the play on the ice has also been equally not as good.
And for the record, it was Jean-Francois Berube that Walsh is also his agent as well.
Right.
So it's Greiss is the only one he doesn't represent.
Right. And we'll continue to monitor that situation, and we'll talk to Arthur Staple next of Newsday. He covers the New York Islanders, and we'll ask him about the New York Islanders and continue to preview tonight's New Year's Eve game between the Jets and Islanders. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
We're back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's the last one of the year. Ezzy and Dave, Drew's off. He'll be back next week. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by our very good friend, Arthur Staple of Newsday Newspaper in New York. Arthur, welcome to Winnipeg. We made sure that there was extra snow just for you.
I feel like it's a little warmer than years past that I've been here, so I don't mind it too much. Maybe I'm just getting used to being up here in the wintertime.
Yeah, it's about minus 10 Celsius. It was a little bit colder yesterday when you got in, but certainly for the end of December, it can be much worse. Sometimes we get down to minus 35, minus 40 Celsius. But certainly the snow has been incredible. But yeah, not too bad. But we're happy that you're in Winnipeg, and you know, we're excited about tonight's New Year's Eve game between the Jets and Islanders. Arthur, we were talking about the Islanders last segment, and you know, the Islanders right now sit in second last in the Eastern Conference. We want to first start off with Yaroslav Halak. He was sent down to the Bridgeport Sound Tigers of the American Hockey League. So he has cleared waivers, correct?
Well, we'll find out in about an hour, but I think you're on the right track there. It's just considering that he's got so much money left on his deal, not just this year, but next year, it seems... It seems far-fetched to think that someone would pick up the entire tab for that and just to have him on their team. So, yeah, he'll probably end up going clearing waivers and going down to the AHL.
So, Arthur, does this mean that Yaroslav Halak isn't going to play with the New York Islanders for the rest of the season, or is there still a chance that if he plays well, then the Islanders will recall him and he'll play again in the NHL this year?
You know, I've learned covering this team and other teams where things like crazy things like this seem to happen that nothing is ever really final until you're out of the organization. So, you know, they've got Thomas Greiss and Jan Berube here. Injuries happen. That's kind of the reason they had this three-goalie mess to begin with last year, because Halak was never able to really get fully healthy last year. I'd imagine that, you know, the intent is to keep him there for the rest of the year and see what these other two guys can do, but also the intent is to see if Halak can get back mentally and, you know, in his on-ice performance to where he was a couple of years ago, where he set the franchise record for wins by a goalie, was by far their best player in the seven-game series against Washington that they ultimately lost by a goal in Game 7. And ever since then, it's just been kind of a steep trajectory downward for him. The injuries, you know, cost him a lot of time last year, and obviously after the World Cup he had for Team Europe, I think the Islanders thought maybe they had their number one goalie back, and it just hasn't worked out that way this season.
Arthur, do you think that the Islanders are ready to give JF Berube an opportunity to be that number one goaltender? Because they seemed loath to send him down to the AHL, and he hasn't played a significant number of games, I think, since 2014-15. So is this, I mean, obviously they didn't want to send him down and lose him, so are they now going to give him the opportunity to seize that mantle?
You know, I think the situation they're in right now, which you would think is all out desperation mode, they're going to go with whoever's playing well. And you know, I think when they had three goalies here for the beginning half of the season, that, you know, was Jack Capuano's mantra that whoever's playing well is going to play. But really, there were some other complicating factors. You know, we had the Alan Walsh tweet about the three goalie situation that led to Halak playing, I believe it was seven straight. To really give him a chance to put up or shut up, or at least shut up his agent, and they only won one or two of those, I believe. It just wasn't, you know, Halak was okay, but not good enough. And Thomas Greiss got a chance, and then they put JF Berube in for a couple, and they didn't win either of those. So, I think perhaps now with just the two goalies there, Jack Capuano's words will be a little bit more followed to the letter of the best goalie he's going to play, because they absolutely need to win games, and I would guess that maybe goes for a month or two, and if they're still stuck down where they are right now, then maybe you'd see Berube get more of a chance just to see what they've got in him.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Arthur Staple of Newsday Sports. Arthur, we have to ask you about Andrew Ladd. He's making his New York Islanders return to Winnipeg tonight. He was the captain of the Jets for 5 years, of course, and he struggled mightily. I remember last time we had you on the show, I believe it was late October, early November, we were asking you about Andrew Ladd and how he was struggling on early on in the season, and you know he hasn't turned it around really. 11 points in 35 games. He's played on the fourth line recently for the New York Islanders. What's going on with Andrew Ladd? Has the game just slowed down for him? Is there something else going on there? Why has he struggled so much this year?
You know, I think he got off to a, I wouldn't say a bad start. It was more a frustrating start. He was playing with John Tavares. They were getting a lot of opportunities. Nothing was really going in for him the first six or seven games. And then the coaching staff decided to start shuffling the lines a little bit. And he ended up playing some fourth line. He played some third line. I guess technically he's just by usage now, he's on the second line with Alan Quine and Jason Chimera, who are not the guys that you would have presumed Andrew Ladd would be playing with. And actually, they've been playing pretty well the last five or six games that they've been together. So I think the Islanders' mantra, since I've been covering them, since they really emerged as a playoff team three or four years ago, is that if they're not getting contributions from all four lines and all six of their defensemen, they're not going to win. And I think they are certainly taking that to heart by putting their big time free agent addition on a line with Jason Chimera, who is obviously a guy they brought in free agency, but not someone you would consider necessarily a top six guy, and Alan Quine, who scored a big goal in the playoffs last year, but wasn't in the opening night lineup this season. So, I think when this team, as it's constituted right now, is playing their best, outside of playing alongside John Tavares, the other lines have to pull their weight, and Ladd has been doing that, I would say, the last four or five games. He's scored 5 points in those games, and seems to have a little more jump in his step, and I'm sure just the frustrating start where nothing was going in for him, playing with Tavares and then not playing with Tavares, definitely wrong-footed him a little bit and set him back in terms of what he was able to produce and what he was doing, in the locker room. But it seems like he's finding his footing a little bit, and that's obviously hugely important. Even if this season may be a little bit lost for the Islanders, they have to have this guy being a leader and contributing on the ice, because he's going to be here for a long time.
Arthur, the Islanders are 11-7-4 in Brooklyn, but they're 3-8-2 away from New York. What do you attribute their disproportionate home and away record to?
I think you're being generous about that home record. It's essentially 500, and they're the team I think with the biggest disparity between home and road games so far this year. I think on the road they've it's really been what's bitten them at home as well, is just the lack of finish. They've been in a lot of their games, other than when they've been swept three games by the Lightning, who really dominated them in all three. Other than those three games, I believe they've been tied or leading in the third period in all but one of the other ones. And that was a 2-1 loss in Washington early in the season. So, much like the game they had in Minnesota the other night, where they got blitzed there at the end of the second period, and that may have been the last you've seen of Yaroslav Halak, they turned around and scored two, putting up four goals against the Wild team that's playing so well defensively. Just shows to me the Islanders do have some talent, and they still have some remnants of the way that they used to play, where they were very resilient, didn't let blown leads or big deficits really hurt them the last couple of years. But there's just an inability to finish games. They had a five-game losing streak recently where they were outscored 11-0 in the third period, and a lot of those games were on the road. They just seem to be unable to, whether it's mental, whether it's structural, whether it's a combination of a lot of things, they've been unable to close out games when they're tied or leading late, and it's really come back to bite them in a big way, just with the losses piling up. Maybe if this was a different year where the Metro wasn't filled with teams that were on multi-game winning streaks and running away with it, they might be able to feel a little bit more confident about their chances to put things right. But this year, I would imagine that getting in the hole they've gotten in and having those late losses that they've had, it's taken a real mental toll in the locker room.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Arthur Staple, New York Islanders writer for Newsday Sports. Arthur, Travis Hamonic is a team worst minus 15. He's got 12 points so far this season, but he certainly struggled defensively. What has your take been on Travis Hamonic's game so far this season?
You know, I think he's actually been okay. Their defensive alignment hasn't changed very much this year, and really there was a stretch of about 10 or 12 games where that top pair of Nick Letty and Hamonic was getting scored on a lot, and it was not necessarily things that they were doing as a pair. I think there were some missteps they had in terms of transition and retrieving pucks in their own end, but I think a lot of it was just the bad luck of being on the ice for so many minutes and giving up, and especially late in games, like I said, when they were giving up those late goals. And I still think the team views those guys as their two best defensemen, and they've smoothed it out a little bit in the last 9 or 10 games. But there have been some moments where it seems like that pair is not necessarily the one you want as the top pair. And you know, the plus minus number is to me a pretty hollow statistic. If you play enough and your team is, whether you're not getting the good goaltending that you need to get, which certainly this team has not gotten. If you're a defenseman who's playing 22 or 23 minutes a night, you're certainly going to end up with a big minus number regardless of how you're playing. So, I think he's been good. And after all of the off-ice turmoil of last season where he had the trade request and the Islanders didn't trade him and ended up, rescinding it at the end of the year, which was a pretty successful year for him, I think, he's put that behind him pretty well, and it's not really something that's talked about very much. And I think he's here for the long term, and I think they're trying to make that Letty Hamonic pairing the sort of top pair defense that puts pressure on other teams with their skating and their puck possession ability, and that maybe is something that still needs a little bit of tweaking.
Arthur, is Jack Capuano's job on the line after this season, or does he get a bit of a pass for taking the Islanders to the second round last year?
Well, he's been around. This is his seventh season. I think it's not out of line to say that's a lot longer than some people might have thought he would have lasted in this job, being that he was, had been a good and consistent minor league coach before that, but not someone who was viewed as an up-and-coming, person in the game. But I think his style fits with, he fits well with the general manager. They've developed a good relationship and a good working relationship, and he fits very well with John Tavares, a star player who's a guy who his dealings with the coaching staff are completely without ego or without, anything that a star player might bring to the table with a coach and a coaching staff that, hasn't had a lot of experience around the league. So, I think things have worked well for a lot of years, and obviously this year is a setback, and, there's new owners in charge who took over this past summer. So I think the seats are hot for all the coaches, and Garth Snow is the general manager, and even some players going into the off season who might still have solid contract situations. I think these owners are evaluating everything, and they're not doing anything hastily, obviously, but they're taking their first few months. And as I reported, John Ledecky, one of the co-owners, has been talking to a lot of hockey people around the league, agents, retired players, executives, trying to get a sense of what direction they want this organization to go in. And so I think if things stay the same, there's a potential for a lot of changes this coming off season, especially if it's one that contains no postseason for them.
Arthur, we've got one more question for you, and we appreciate you coming on as always. You just mentioned John Tavares. He's got 1 year left on his contract after this season at $5.5 million. I would argue that might have been the best signing of all time when you consider that John Tavares is one of the best centers in all of the game, and he's only making $5.5 million a year. Has there been any talks whatsoever, to your knowledge, between Tavares and the Islanders about an extension after next year?
Well, they can't talk until, technically they can't talk until July 1st of this coming summer. So, all the indications that I've gotten from people, in Tavares' camp and in the Islanders' camp is that this is something that the Islanders very much want to have happen. John Ledecky said very publicly, kind of his first public statements as owner last summer, that he wants John Tavares here for a long time. And Ledecky and Scott Malkin have both met with Pat Brisson, who's Tavares' agent. I'm sure not to talk any contract stuff. That would be against the rules, but certainly just to establish a relationship and Garth Snow has a good relationship with Pat Brisson. So, you know, if it's Garth Snow that's making the decisions going into the summer, even if it's somebody else, I think it's clear from the ownership that they want John Tavares to be the captain and the centerpiece of this team for many years to come. And really the question is whether he wants that. And, you know, he certainly got some questions, I'm sure, about what direction this team is going in. So to my mind, you know, once the season, regular season ends, if they're out of the playoffs, whatever moves the owners are going to make are going to have to be swift and decisive, because they have to show Tavares that they're serious about changing the, you know, restoring the franchise to where it was even just last season, where they, like you said, won their first playoff series for the first time in 23 years, and John Tavares had a big hand in it. So I imagine that those things are going to happen, and then we're going to see on July 1st if a big offer, you know, to me, 8 years and $11 million per year isn't out of the realm of possibility, doubling his salary and making him the highest paid player in the league. You know, this is the sort of, these are the sort of steps the Islanders are going to have to take to keep him happy and keep him here. And there's so many factors that go into it on his end about what, you know, what he sees from the franchise and the organization going forward, and what he sees around him in terms of the personnel and the talent. You know, I think next July 1 is going to be interesting, not just for what the Islanders can do in free agency and on the trade market after the expansion draft to remake their team and put this bad season to bed, but also what John Tavares is going to decide. And that may decide a lot of things going forward about what the future of this team holds, you know, what John Tavares decides when the contract can be put on the table.
Arthur Staple of Newsday Sports in New York. We always have him on when we want to talk about the Islanders. He's been a frequent guest of the show. Arthur, big thanks for coming on, and we look forward to seeing you tonight at the MTS Center for tonight's New Year's Eve game between the Jets and Islanders.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Anytime.
Thank you very much, Arthur. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. He's Dave. I'm Ezra.
He's Rory.
He's Rory. Drew's away.
We almost had my mom on.
Yeah. Dave actually, during the commercial break, got a FaceTime from his mom in Florida.
Yeah.
And had to tell his mom that he was about to go live on radio. But we got to wish your mom a happy new year.
Yeah. She was. She wished you a happy engagement. She was very happy. She heard about it on the pregame show last week.
Yeah.
That's how news spread, how quickly it went viral.
Yeah. I appreciate it, Dave. And yeah, it's been a pretty quick.
Have we even talked about your engagement yet? Like,
no, we haven't.
Holy moly. Ezra Ginsberg, an engaged man. Yeah. Naomi.
Yeah. Well, and it was so crazy because I proposed to Naomi on Thursday.
Yep.
I proposed to her at her school that she teaches at.
Yeah.
And about, I don't know, 12 hours later, we were on a plane to Mexico. So we had a little bit of a party with our, you know, immediate family Thursday night.
Yeah.
But, you know, right after that, we had to pack and get on a plane.
So Scarsdale surprise. It was a whirlwind.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind, I guess. It was 9 days ago that I proposed to Naomi. So, yeah, it's been it's very exciting.
You have a glow about you. I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah. Naomi was the best thing to ever happen to me, and I'm very happy these days. And gone are the single days of me, watching SportsCenter in my underwear eating Domino's pizza. So,
well, Ezzy, those things are still happening.
It's true.
Don't force me to get Naomi on the phone, because we'll go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline right now.
Yeah. Who am I kidding? When Naomi goes out of town, I still do the same things. Yeah. I'm just not by myself.
That's
I guess, in the sense of being in a relationship. But it's been amazing. You know, big thanks to Rick who gave me a shout out on the Jets post game show. And I've gotten a lot of nice emails and tweets from listeners of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So it's been just awesome, you know. Going back to the Jets here, Dave.
Oh, yes, the Jets.
You know, if I can segue out of that somehow.
Sure. Okay, you just did.
We just had Arthur Staple on talking about the New York Islanders, and it was a little bit surprising. He was actually saying that, he thinks Andrew Ladd actually hasn't had that bad of a season, and he's starting to play better. But when you look at Andrew Ladd, Dave, and, 7 goals and 11 points, after signing that big contract with the New York Islanders, I mean, Andrew Ladd's a guy that was a top producer for the Winnipeg Jets for 5 seasons, and certainly you wouldn't expect to see Andrew Ladd on the third or fourth line for the New York Islanders, but right now there's just nothing really going right for this Islander team. Yaroslav Halak, we expect to clear waivers and go down to the American Hockey League with Bridgeport, and Thomas Greiss, we expect to get the start tonight against the Jets at MTS Center, puck drop at 6 o'clock p.m. What are the keys for you, Dave, for the Jets against this Islanders team? Marco Dano is not going to play tonight. He's going to be replaced in the lineup, we expect, with Andrew Kopp, who was recalled from the Manitoba Moose yesterday. Where do you think Andrew Kopp fits in, Dave? And what did you think of the way Andrew Kopp played for the Manitoba Moose? It was a short stint, but where do you think he fits in, and what are the keys for the Jets tonight?
Yeah, it might have been the shortest stint we've ever seen someone. He was sent down on Wednesday. He practiced with the Moose on Thursday and was recalled Friday morning. So it was a whirlwind affair for Andrew Kopp down in the AHL. He handled it well, though, to his credit. And we'll talk about that later when we talk about the Moose. But both him and Brandon Tanev have said the right things. And he wasn't happy with being sent down. He wants to be an NHL player, feels he's an NHL player. Here is another opportunity for him. I think, what's limiting up for Andrew Kopp is simply that the Jets want him to get minutes and he can go down without having to clear waivers. So he's a victim of that more than his play. I think he's going to slot in on the fourth line, probably with Nick Petan and Drew Stafford. He'll go on the wing, though. I think Maurice likes Petan at center, and he'll keep Petan probably at center and go with Kopp on the wing.
And yesterday's practice lines, because Patrick Laine was not at practice,
right,
but he will play tonight,
right,
versus the New York Islanders, the fourth line was Andrew Kopp on the wing with Nick Petan centering and Chris Thorburn,
right, who's
been a healthy scratch of late on that line. But Drew Stafford was
up in, yeah,
was playing on the top line. But so, as you mentioned, it looks like it'll be Drew Stafford, Nick Petan, and Andrew Kopp on that fourth line tonight.
Which, again, that's kind of the way the NHL is trending, right? You don't have a gritty fourth line that's just going to grind down the top line of the opposition. You have a line that could potentially score goals. I mean, we saw, Nick Petan make a nifty pass to Drew Stafford in that game against Chicago, where Stafford finally kind of got off the schneid and managed to score a goal, which is something, he's obviously been wanting to do for quite some time. And, Kopp talked about his versatility and his ability to play on the wing and at center. And that is, a benefit to him. And Ted touched on it earlier. And having that versatility and not being a player who, if something happens to Nick Petan, and they need Kopp to move to center, they can do that. You know what I mean? If Nick Petan, something in-game happens, you have that versatility to send someone like Kopp to center. And look, Kopp was the 7th leading goal scorer for this team. He had 4 goals. Now, that's kind of a knock on the Jets for not having a lot of secondary scoring. But, I believe today's skate was an optional at MTS Center. So we won't see the lines as yet. But, basically, as you saw them from the practice yesterday, Stafford was in for Laine, who really obviously is fine. Maurice told us he was fine, that he expects him to play tonight. So Laine will go back up to that first line, and you'll have Stafford playing. And again, you have a little more skill on that fourth line, and they need to start scoring. I mean, that's what it ultimately comes down to. If you're going to get the minutes, we saw Mathias, Lowry, and Armia. They looked very good together. They looked really like they didn't miss much of a beat when they were playing on Thursday night in Columbus. Against Columbus here at the MTS Center. I thought that they looked very good. Mathias scored the first goal of the game. It was a nice redirect from a Trouba shot. But overall, I just thought that Armia had a nice game. He was, he had a lot of takeaways. He was good with the puck. And I thought Adam Lowry actually had a pretty good game. So that line is good as well. But the fact of the matter is that ultimately you have to put goals in. You can't just rely on Wheeler, Little, Scheifele, Ehlers, and Laine. You need secondary scoring. That's what this team needs. They have a lot of primary scoring, and it's about the secondary scoring. Now you need Nick Petan to get goals. You need Kopp. And you know what, as you talked about it earlier, and this is a perfect game. The Islanders are coming in. They're a little wounded. You need to jump on them early, because the reality is, look, we always hear it, and it's cliche to say, but you can't take any team lightly in the NHL. Well, the reality is the Jets aren't an upper echelon team taking a lower team for granted. The Jets right now are I think they're I don't know what they're about 3 or 4 points out of a wild card spot right now. So they're not a dominant team by any stretch of the imagination. They can't afford to take anybody lightly, and they have to do what they did against Columbus, which is jump on them early and then not let the foot off the gas. They have to just keep coming at the Islanders in waves. And now that they have a lot of balance amongst those four lines, they need production from all four lines.
And this Islanders team, even though they've got a lot of offensive talent at the top with John Tavares and Brock Nelson and Anders Lee, it's not the fastest team. And we saw how quick the Jets were against Chicago and against the Columbus Blue Jackets. But when you talk about, you know, some of the guys on the back end there, Johnny Boychuk, Calvin DeHaan, Dennis Seidenberg, I mean, a third line like Lowry, Armia, and Mathias, I think, can really take advantage of that. So I agree, Dave. I mean, this is a game that the Jets have to win. They have to respond after losing that game against the Columbus Blue Jackets, a game in which they got out to the good lead and looked like they were going to win. So it's a big game here on New Year's Eve. Let's head to break now. When we come back, we're going to start our Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose 2016 year in review. It's the last Illegal Curve of the season. We're going to say goodbye to 2016 and say hello to 2017 when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.